Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, friends. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Whilst you're out on your horrible Monday morning commute, me and Phil are sitting in the rugby dungeon. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Jonathan.
And down the line, I think he's in Bath. It's Tim Cocker.
Hello, Jonathan Beardmore. Hello, Philip Largan.
Ah, there we go. Where are you? Bath?
Honest, I am. The Egg Chasers shipping container has been upgraded significantly, let me tell you.
Oh, what? Ooh. Oh, that BT money again.
I'm in the most unbelievable apartment right now. I can imagine James Bond living here. If you know Bath very well, it's on Milsom Street.
Okay.
It's unreal. I can't tell you. I finished the game earlier on. JB, one of the greatest games of all time, Bath v Sale.
Oh, it was quite something, wasn't it? I mean, we'll talk about it later, but it's quite something.
Yeah, went straight to the Thermé Spa in Bath, and then come back to do this podcast.
Was the Thermé Spa
very zen
open at that time? What time was it closed on Sunday?
9.
Wow, what a wonderful way to finish off such a spectacular game, Tim. A 7-7 draw.
Oh, we had one of the great weekends down in Bath. World Cup final weekend. We went down, went for a few beers in Bristol, came up, watched Bath versus Harlequins. But in the morning, to get over our hangover from our Bristol escapades, we went to the Thermé Spa. The second it opened, we were there. second.
We were there 10 minutes before it opened.
Exactly. Coffees and pastries in hand.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, so it's at least you know if you ever come into Bath at any point, there will always be rugby on in every pub. Rather than our usual native Manchester.
Yes,
exactly. So yeah. you were at the Bath game today. I think it was probably the best game of the weekend, if not the year. But it was missing one thing.
So much so, we should keep our.
So we should keep our powder dry on it, shouldn't we?
Absolutely, JB. Couldn't agree more.
But it was missing one thing.
Tries?
No, bigger than that.
What's his name? Barry McGuigan?
Oh, bigger than that.
A
well, the Roman...
Tim Cocker, Steve Diamond showdown?
Well, they always used to say all roads lead to Rome. Well, in my case, all roads lead to Burgess, and that's who was missing. And he's been in the news this week, or shall I say, he's been making news.
He has.
Well, let's actually just be really accurate about this. JB, you've been making news for the past few weeks in the rugby universe.
I don't think there's anything to do with it. I think it was completely...
No. It was 100% to do with you.
It wasn't. I don't know how it would... I think it was just coincidence.
No, listen.
Go on.
Sam Burgess tweeted about the whole, I've noticed people saying stuff about me and my time with England.
Yeah.
I just want to say this, that and the other. And the tweets that were then broadcast and went around the rugby world and were commented on by everybody. That, if you actually look at Sam Burgess, what he retweeted immediately before tweeting out those things that got reported is a reply from one of our listeners to you.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay, so...
No, it's great.
Yeah, I mean...
With the Owen Farrell thing as well.
Well, true. I would say this, right? It was not a criticism of Sam Burgess, who did everything and more that could have been expected of him. It was no way a criticism of him. It was, actually, just a little bit of a reality check for those who think that we are missing Farrell. I say we, the English are missing Farrell and Lancaster, because last time they had the keys to the car, they didn't do so well. And that was my thing, really. But it was interesting, wasn't it, that he felt the need to say some individuals in the England camp. And I'd love to know who he was referring to.
Yeah, but he specifically defended the coaches.
Well, he would. They picked him for the World Cup. I would look, if Stuart Lancaster and Andy Farrell picked me to play a World Cup, I would know in my heart of hearts it was the wrong thing. But my God, I'd defend them.
But he's got skin in the game now. It's completely irrelevant whether he defends them or not for him now.
Yeah, but he's still going to defend them because they're his mates. They've basically given him the gift of a World Cup.
But he doesn't want to defend his actual mates, the players.
Well, who says that?
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but who's to say that you know that they are his actual mates? I mean, if I'm in that squad and I've worked my entire career to get there, and then all of a sudden Sam Burgess is in, I'm not sure how comfortable I feel with him being there.
Probably not. And that's exactly what the point he's making.
Mm-hmm. Well, the point you're making is why would he defend the coaches still? And I can see absolutely every reason why he would.
But he's got no skin in the game.
Yes. Yeah,
my point was, why would he defend the coaches unless he actually believed he needs to defend the coaches? And that is the point.
Yeah, maybe. I would just say this. I would defend Stuart Lancaster and Andy Farrell if they picked me for a World Cup, regardless of the time frame or the amount of skin I have in the game.
Here's a thought with hindsight. Is maybe the mistake that Stuart Lancaster made is not playing Burgess more, because he was on the field when England were leading against Wales and it all fell apart when he and Billy Vunipola went off.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I was looking at the coverage before that game. I love the fact that we still talk about this game. and the amount of injuries and injury concerns Wales had and how many late arrivals or late fitness tests there were into that starting 15. And actually, you know, yes, they were leading, and when he went off, they then lost. I actually think they should have been leading by more. I mean, this was their home World Cup. They were second favourites. They should have put that game to bed a long, long time ago. It shouldn't have come down to kick to the corner from Rob Shaw or whatever it may be. But here's the real point. Sam Burgess still drives headlines.
Yeah, and we are still, exactly as you say, we are still talking about that game and the Lancaster fallout and the Burgess fallout. Coming up for 4 years later, three and a bit years later.
I want to correct you, JB. We still drive headlines.
Something like that.
It's true. It's what's happened the last few weeks. It's just a fact.
It's just a fact. It's just one of those things. Do you know what? If he wants to make some serious money, even more serious money, he should come back to Union. Unfortunately, the best place for him to come back to, he's already been to once. And actually, no, go back to Bath. It'd be fascinating. Where would you like to see him go next?
If he wants to make some money, go to France.
No, he's got to come back to England, or it's not the story.
Yeah, true.
Harlequins would be ideal. They they seem to be rather frivolous with cash.
If he's complaining about some of the players from the England squad, maybe Harlequins isn't the best place to go.
Yes, maybe that is a good point.
They're like that. Well, Steve Diamond has always talked about the local identity of his sale team, and. Yeah. And they're sort of getting a lot more South Africans in at the minute, so maybe he needs a couple more Northerners in. Get Burgess back there.
Locality is all relative, Tim.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're from Sale?
I do.
He's getting guys, I'm sure he's getting guys from the northwest of South Africa.
Exactly. By the way, how enormous is Jean-Luc Dupreuil? Have you seen the size of this boy? Did you see him in real life, Tim?
I did, he's a big boy.
He's bloody enormous.
Now, I'm going to move things on with something. I'm going to tie a rugby thing into something that's happened. What probably the biggest story of the last 24 hours as we get to record this. Certainly in the sporting universe, the Tyson Fury-Deontay Wilder fight. Did either of you watch it?
No, I didn't need to, really.
okay.
I also didn't feel I needed to.
But I obviously watched it on the fantastic BT Sport box office.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, all I'm going to say about this is the fight in the actual... I think I feel the same way in rugby a little bit. No, not really so much. But boxing has nothing to do with the fight and all to do with the build-up and the aftermath. All I need to know is the result.
It was good. I just happened to wake up at about 5:30 and put it on. It was in the third round.
So, I did exactly the same thing, actually. I did exactly the same thing. And I caught the very end of the fight before they came on, and then I fell asleep again. It just isn't that...
You know, perfect timing.
It isn't that important, is it, really?
It sounds like many efforts where I've got to come round to yours to watch the Super Bowl, JB.
Yeah.
The number of Super Bowls we've slept through together, mate.
Yeah. Do you want to come round for an adult sleepover? Okay.
Now, what I was thinking was, because in terms of a sporting story, Tyson Fury's comeback is phenomenal.
It is amazing.
Where he was 18 months ago, it's quite amazing where he's got to.
Yeah, it's not quite just amazing. I mean, everyone talks, don't they, about the mental health issues. And don't get me wrong, it's, you know, the whole thing's impressive. For me, though, losing 10 stone to come back, I mean, there's one thing putting on weight. 10 stone is a lot of weight.
It's a hell of a lot of weight.
I mean, that's enormous. And then to come back as a high level athlete, he's only 30 years old.
Yeah,
I know.
Like, he looks like he's 45 or something.
At least.
But,
so what I was thinking was, what are the big rugby comebacks?
Ooh.
Now, this could be an individual game, but actually what I was thinking about was the individual stories.
Well, the biggest individual story, I mean, that's quite easy for me. I'd say it's Johnny Wilkinson.
Ah, okay.
Hero. Then he's got all of that nonsense with his injuries. Can't really shake him off. Then ends up winning two European Cups with Toulon. Loved by three. The English, adored by the French.
Was he not part of all three?
I think he was only part of the first two.
Two, I think.
Yeah.
And Ditto was pulling the strings in the third one. I could be wrong about that, but that feels right.
Now, one which seems to me a little bit more Fury-related, because it just is. Do you remember the story of Kevin Yates?
The prop.
Go on. The ear biter.
Alleged biter. He always
ear biter.
He always denied it, didn't he? But obviously, he had his trouble, much as Tyson Fury had, and we all seem to forget that now. Went to Super Rugby, came back, and I think he might have made the England team again.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that's someone who did, a couple that I thought of, one Phil Vickery, and I'd forgotten this, but he won the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Finished playing with Gloucester, age 30, had loads of back surgery, was thought that his career was over.
Yeah.
Joined Wasps, had loads of surgeries, came back, ended up playing in another World Cup final in 2007.
And in the Lions.
And played for the Lions.
Oh, God, yeah. He did play the second World Cup final. Because who did they let Phil Vickery go for in Gloucester? It was a big-name prop.
Ooh.
I want to say... I can't remember. But yeah, that was a big deal.
Another comeback, Stuart Lancaster.
Yes.
Well,
we're maybe witnessing it now. Maybe we need to... A few more years' time we need to see, but potentially.
Well, I mean, in the last 12 months, or last 6 months, he's won everything he could have possibly won with Leinster.
Yeah, kind of. Well, yeah, no. He has.
And then... Right, but here's the ultimate one from the world of rugby that I found. I'm sure we must have mentioned this guy before, but a former Welsh like semi-pro/amateur player called Chris Jones.
Semi-pro? Who, go on.
He was known as like one of the wildest players ever to have played rugby. He played for, is it Treorchy? I can't remember. I'll find the team in a minute. But he like was no holds barred as a player, a hooker. He used to carry an axe around with him in his kit bag.
What?
When was this? Was this in like the 70s or something?
70s and 80s.
2016?
Yeah. Yeah. He said...
I know this boy. I know who he is.
Yes, you know where this is going.
Go on.
So he said when he described games that he used to play in, he said there were massive fights at least 10 times a match. Games were gladiatorial. Anything went on the rugby field. You just waited for the referee to turn his back. I'm quoting him here. And then you boot, punch, stamp. That was the way it was. And every team had their hard men. He said you had the Treorchy back row of the early 1970s who had a back rower called Phil Wild and John the Punch. And a hooker called Di Tank.
Wow. Wow.
He says the law of the jungle. Anyway, he was a bit of a psychopath on and off the field and ended up getting in some loads of fights.
Did he end up in jail?
Two life bans. two lifebans from rugby. We managed to overturn both of them.
Right.
Was that two separate lifebans? Or...
two separate lifebans.
So for two separate incidents.
He got incidents. Banned for life, then he came, but then he managed to overturn it. Then he got banned for life again, then he managed to overturn it. Anyway, so... while he was out on a night out, he ended up spending a night in a police cell, and he had this epiphany and found God in a police cell.
I have got so many things to say about this. So...
and now, sorry, now...
let me guess. No. Let me guess. He helps kids.
Yes.
Of course he does. Because that's what every inappropriate human who has committed loads of crimes and can't get back into the main workforce does. They go back and help kids. And I can't think of anyone less suitable to go and help kids than this man. And it happens time and time again. I'll tell you another one. Borussia Dortmund, right, have their ex-hooligans dress the stadium up for games. So... and they say it's some sort of like amazing comeback for these guys, like rehabilitation. It's not. It means you've got to do a stint as a hooligan before you're able to become part of the club. And you see this over and over again. No, he should be rehabilitated, go back into the workforce and work in a call centre. I don't want him working with kids.
I'm just imagining a Borussia Dortmund fan going, hello, Mr. Mrs. Can I please help? There's a knuckle duster. Get busy. Come back next week.
Have you served your time beating up other fans yet? No. Okay. Do that first. Unbelievable. Completely inappropriate.
But it's from the rugby world. It's a comeback. It's the best comeback I could find. So unless anyone tweet us at Rugby Podcast or get in touch if you can come up with a better one.
Well, two other ones that I'll just mention quickly. So one other one who went on to win two Heineken Cups with Toulon. Juan Smith.
Oh, very good.
Who won World Cup Tri-Nations and successful Lions,
great
Lions
shout.
Tour in great South
shout.
Africa. Had to retire playing because of an Achilles injury in 2011. Had 2 years without playing and finally saw kind of his fourth or fifth surgeon, who was just at that stage trying to help him walk normally again, and managed to get him back running and return to Toulon and was... instrumental in their top 14 and Heineken Cup wins.
And I'll give you the last one.
Okay.
Well, it's not the last one. It's my last one. You guys can go as long as you want. Thomas Castagnet.
Double
hamstring surgery. He's one of them left a nick in his hamstring in its own right, I do believe. Ooh. Yeah, and then went back, started winning things again for Saracens.
Yeah.
A lovely story.
Great comeback. The only other one worth mentioning is not a player's comeback, but it is the biggest Tier 1 international rugby comeback in a game, which happened earlier this year after Australia were 31 points to 7 down against Argentina in Argentina. In the Rugby Championship. And they scored 38 points and only conceded 3 after that to win 45-34.
What an astounding game.
There you go.
An astounding game all round. Hang on. No, isn't the biggest comeback... Leinster versus Northampton, European Cup final.
I don't... Well, that's not a Tier 1 international game.
No, it's not.
But...
No, but... Yes.
I don't know. That might be the biggest Heineken or European Cup final comeback.
Well, that's good. 18 minutes and no current rugby. I went to Harlequins this weekend, boys.
So that was a good game. That was almost a comeback.
Yes, they came back from 5-3 down.
No, as in almost to come back, because Exeter almost came back to win it in the end. And that final scrum, where Quins were almost pushed off the ball, but somehow managed to hook it back and get it out, that could have easily been an Exeter penalty.
Absolutely.
And then Exeter to do what Exeter do.
Yeah. It was, well, first and foremost, my overriding thoughts on Quins. When you're there, it was a sellout. It was 17,000, I think. And I'm looking around. There's concession stands everywhere. Everyone's drinking. It's a tremendous atmosphere. How are they not making any money? They're in Twickenham. They've got a ground. They've got, you know, it's sold. I just can't understand how this club is not making money. That'd be the first one. The second thing is, it is a tremendous atmosphere, and it's a tremendous day to, you know, a day out or night out. It really is. And I was treated very, very well. So just a quick thank you to Chris Warwick for treating me to a few beers.
Very good.
Yeah.
What do you make of the game?
I thought it was brilliant, and it was almost the opposite to what I expected it to be.
So I agree with that. especially after the first Exeter, the pushover try.
Yes.
For them to go into the lead, I thought, right, okay. I've seen this before. I know the script. Here we go.
Yeah. So at that point, I put on a £10 bet for Exeter to win by 20 points.
Yeah, and that, I probably wouldn't have disagreed with you at that stage.
I was also drafting a tweet which quotes something like, drills always beat skills. And then I deleted it. Because Harlequins came back out and they just beat Exeter up. There's no other way to put it. And a lot of people were talking about this Exeter side being a second string. Not really.
Well, they were missing, yes, really.
They were missing their two loose head props.
Yeah.
Missing LCD.
Mm-hmm. But think of the pack. You've got club captain Jack Yendall. You've got Mitch Lees, who's an absolute monster.
Can I stop you before you go any further? Because is what you're going to do is to say, yes, it's a second string, but their second string's really good. Because I can just save you a whole lot of time and say that now.
But it is really, really good. I mean, you know, the back row was enormous. Armand, Ewers, I think Kvesic.
So I think the important, rather than just listing the players, important thing to say is exactly what you've just said, Tim. But actually, rather than talk about Exeter, put the credit onto Quinn's pack. Because
they literally just beat them up.
They fronted up superbly.
Yep.
And, a couple of the boys. So I thought Chisholm was very good. I thought Sinclair was very good. And Alex Dombrandt has been, for the last 3 weeks, has been superb.
Welsh qualified Alex Dombrandt.
Is he?
He's just started following us on Twitter this evening, at Rugby Podcast.
Oh, wow. Well, he's also from Croydon. So we'll see how that works out for him. But yeah, qualified for Wales, played under 20s, but also qualifies for England.
And he's
Alex, if you're listening, which I'm sure you are clearly, because you follow us on Twitter, I'm sure you're listening right now. I occasionally have to crash in Croydon. I'll see you in the box park, mate.
What, for a fight?
Definitely not.
So, a few observations. Seeing, you get so much more from seeing these teams in the flesh. One, I thought James Lang was very good, and I thought they stuck to their plan very, very well. Even when it felt like it maybe wasn't working or they were wasting the ball. And what I mean by that, there's a lot of diagonal kicks, and eventually it came off. And I was very impressed with the discipline to carry on just with that same process over and over again. Damien McKenzie. The reason I say Damien McKenzie is because I was about to say, when you watch Marcus Smith in real life, he reminds me of Damien McKenzie.
I think he's not quite got the top end pace, but
just how quick he gets in, especially Damien McKenzie at 10, just the way he gets into position, like just that sort of scamper, gives the ball scamper and scamper pass.
Did he throw the intercept for Ian Whitten?
I think he did.
It just it's like Damien. That is just like Damien McKenzie.
Pure DMAC.
What would DMAC do?
Yeah, and the last one is I don't think Harlequins can continue with their front row. I think one or two of them have got to go.
In terms of their performance on the pitch, because their performance on the pitch was very good.
Sort of very good. So what you've got are incredibly strong characters, one might say, if one was charitable. Sinclair does not shut his mouth. Dave Ward does not shut his mouth. And Marlowe does not shut his mouth. And I think there was a period in that game where they had two 10 metres. They were marched back on penalties and they moved back 10 metres ago. Now, I appreciate the front row weren't all involved in that, but throughout the game you can hear the referee saying, don't talk, stop talking to me. And I just feel that they get on the wrong side of the ref. And they don't, from what I can tell, those three don't even like each other. So they've got all the talent in the world, but I think that might give you an indication of how good Quinns can be and the things that let them down.
Now, I don't think that Mike Brown deserves to be on the outside with England in the way he is and has been. But inadvertently, Eddie Jones has just done Quinns a huge favour. Mind you, that would be harsh on Mike Brown to suggest that he would give anything less than 100%. He's not that kind of a guy. However, my point is, England guys, top players with something to prove, is a powerful force. And you saw that in this game as well. I love it.
So that's an interesting point. Things you don't really see on TV. How good Mike Brown is positionally.
Yeah.
He's very good. And the other guy who I thought was outstanding was Phil Dolman. And what he's able to do, his timing to come onto a high ball is as good, if not better, than Mike Brown's. or you know, not better. It's in that range.
Yeah,
it's which, phenomenal.
Which is the very top of that range.
Yeah, and I think if you're not watching them week in week out, you probably wouldn't notice that.
Dollars is one of those guys that would be right on that list of nearly but didn't get a cap.
Well, he almost did because he was called into the Wales squad, wasn't he, ahead of the final, was it 2 years ago? And ended up getting a knee injury, so couldn't travel.
Cruel.
Yeah, that is cruel because I think he's probably 32, 33 now and has unfortunately probably missed his chance.
But let's talk more broadly about the Gallagher Premiership.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that there are 4 points between 12th and 6th. Bath started the day in 11th and finished the day in a European spot.
Bath did?
Yeah.
What, with that draw?
With a draw.
Oh, no. They were 10th, sorry.
I was going to say. So if
Sale could have gone. A win for Sale would have taken them from bottom to 6th.
I know. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. So 4 points separate the whole of the bottom half of the table. And Newcastle Falcons, who did win away at Northampton, remain bottom because of Sale getting the points for the draw.
Yeah.
There's more of a gap between first and third than there is between third and
12th. Amazing, isn't it? Absolutely staggering stuff. I'm just trying to work out, where have Sale finished the day? Because that's what everyone wants to know about.
11th. So Newcastle bottom on 15 points. Sale 11th on 16th. Northampton and Worcester 10th and 9th on 17 points. Leicester and Bristol, who played each other, which we'll come on to, 8th and 7th on 18 points. Bath on 19 points. So that four points.
You have to make a bet and make a commitment right now. You have to put your mortgage on one team to go down. Who'd you put it on?
Northampton.
Worcester.
I had this whole conversation today and I came down on Worcester as well. Just, I think, over the course of 22 games, you'd have to think that the quality of squads will tell the truth, but Worcester are no slouches either.
Now, I would like to know, and I'm sure Phil can go quiet for 5 minutes and find out, how far below the sixth place team is behind last year's sixth place team at the same time, but how far ahead the bottom place team is compared to the bottom place team last time.
You are probably right. I could find that out. I'm not going to now. It does feel that everyone is just... Because everyone's picking up wins. I mean, all of those bottom six teams, they are all on 3 wins. All of them.
Seven. The bottom seven teams.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it is the bottom seven, because including Bath. Yeah. Yeah, from 6th down to 12th, they're all on 3 wins.
Staggering stuff.
So just a couple of things that it's worth looking at when you look at the table, which may play out longer term. So one of them is Harlequins are in 5th place. They've won one more game, so they've had 4 wins. But every single time they've lost, their 5 losses, they've every single time got a losing bonus point, which I think will be really important. If they keep doing that, because that was one of their big things last year. They weren't picking up wins, but they also weren't getting anything out of the games.
I think you're right, Phil, that bonus points are going to be crucial. And yes, I think you're absolutely right. And do you know the only team that have yet to register a try bonus point?
Sale?
I do, yes.
Is it Sale?
It is Sale.
Crikey, I would not have thought of that.
It's important, isn't it? I think you're absolutely right. And Sale... I just want to, just going back to Harlequins a second, JB. You said, I remember back in the early days of the pod, you were a massive Exeter Chiefs and Bath
advocate.
You loved
advocate.
It.
I still do. I've actually got my Bath 150 year tie in the dungeon.
Yeah, you loved it. You absolutely loved it.
I bought some Harlequins cufflinks this weekend.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I just sensed that you're being seduced by Harlequins a little bit. How did it compare to a night out of the AJ Bell?
They're incomparable. They just simply are. I mean, you know, one's Vegas, one's Monaco. You've got to decide which one you like more. I would just... They're far more... They're not as... Not passionate. What's the word? What's the word for it? Like, it's Sale, right? There are less people, obviously, right? But it seems that the atmosphere is a little bit more spiky and edgy. You don't get that in Quinns. They seem like a far more well-heeled set. That'd be the bit. And also, I mean, my geography is not great. Is Twickenham in the countryside?
No.
Because almost everyone...
It has lots and lots of parks. It's very fortunate to have lots of parks around.
Right, because it just felt like everyone had come back from pheasant shooting. I mean, like lots and lots of wax jackets.
Yeah.
So, and mind you, that could be any rugby ground. I'd say the range of concessions in Harlequins is far superior to the range of concessions in Sale.
Yes, that does make a lot of sense.
Yes, and they're all owned by Ollie Cohn. You know that?
Yeah, the Jolly Hog.
That's it. Yeah, he's got loads
of
company. So there you go. I go to Harlequins. I come back with all the big news for you.
If you want to buy a concession at a rugby ground, best trust in a man whose fighting weight was north of 20 stone.
Exactly. You like his food.
Damn right.
Just one other point to make about the table, which I think will lead us into the next game. So the team who has both the worst points difference and the most points against is one Leicester Tigers.
Yes.
Which is not a good... That is not a good sign. And we've spoken in the past about their kind of shaky defence. And going into this game, the Bristol-Leicester game, God, that was something that was exposed. Now, I know they lost Kyle Eastmond after 25 minutes or whatever it was. But even before that, their defensive structure and at times their offensive structure, they seemed clueless. There was times that someone made a break. Adam Thompson made a break that they blew late in the second half. And no one seemed to know what to do when he made the break. No one seemed to know what to do to support him.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
With the talent that they've got in some positions.
Well, almost all, really. I mean, yeah, they were a bit under strength. But yeah, let's just say basically all. I've got, allegedly, and I've said this many, many times, but it sounds like a start of another Tigers revolt. More emergency meetings, more players wanting to talk to other players.
I would point out to everyone, the last time I said that, nothing happened.
I would like to point out, the last two times JV has said that, nothing happened.
But then the third time, Master Connor got fired.
You didn't say it. You did preempt that there's going to be a big announcement on Monday, he just got fired.
Yeah, well, he did, so that's the end of that. and I think they might be on something, because they looked garbage. I mean, they looked utter garbage. There's no way to put this, and it makes me think of a couple of other things, right? So number one, I know it's very trendy to say player empowerment, let the players lead it, it's all very new age hippie rugby coaching nonsense. But actually, if that was true, the one team that could do this would be Leicester Tigers, with the England halfbacks, Kyle Eastman, who's no mug, the England outside centre, the England winger, and then, you know,
Australian experienced hooker, Australian centre.
You know, you could literally throw me on one wing, Tim at fullback, and you like Harry Thacker at hooker, and it'd still probably be okay, right? Because these guys have got so much experience. So it leads me to think that is nonsense. And the other thing is, here we go. Wait for this explosion. Does it tell you something about England that they are continuing to pick players who are doing so badly for their club team, as if their reputation on the international scene is greater or more than actually what they do for their day-to-day living?
It's an interesting question.
I don't like that as well, because some of these guys have got massive bodies of work.
Yeah.
And also, you have to be nuanced about these things. Just because a good player is playing in a team that's not playing well doesn't mean they're not doing their job.
But you could, couldn't you, say, if a good player is playing in a bad team, you know, that's why he's not performing. But when all the good players play together, what does that mean?
Well, yeah, they have got some issues in that team, particularly in the pack. I mean,
well, you say that. Who are they? I was thinking about this. The only person they're missing in that team, Talusa Vianu.
Dan Cole?
Cole played.
Youngs, he's out, wasn't he?
They put Palotta now on the bench and they started Kerr.
Bateman, he's out.
So my point is that they've got an Australian international that they re-signed available to them. So, okay, maybe one or two players, but actually, they're pretty much at full strength, which makes me even more concerned.
Yeah, and really that kind of is my point, that when you've got so guys like Callum Mahoney and Mike Williams, who are supposed to be doing the majority of your hard carrying, and they're simply not doing it, who do you go to next?
But why did we ever think that Callum Mahoney would be the hard carrier?
Well,
I've never thought
really.
That.
Why did Leicester? Good question.
I mean, Denton, I get.
No, they're missing Thompson as well.
Thompson, I get. I mean, yeah, he's got a cut.
Thompson, fair play.
But Callum Mahoney is a quality squad player. He's not your number one main man, number eight.
Yeah, but do you know who a real quality squad player is? Jackson Ray. That's a quality squad player. And I think there's a difference in there between a quality squad player at the top end where Leicester wants to be and a quality squad player for, I don't know, London Irish. You know, there is a difference. And I kind of see Callum Mahoney in that sort of mould, which is, he'll do okay for Worcester. Yeah, so
we've talked about it a bunch of times. I just think that the perfect decision of Leicester's last 5-6 years is the fact that they have as their hookers Palotta now, Youngs and Kerr. They don't have as their hookers Harry Thacker. Five tries, 2 games
McGuigan.
Played against them.
It's amazing, isn't it?
George McGuigan.
Well, McGuigan was one of the reasons why Thacker left. That's another one you could put on the why did they bother? They had the future of that position for Leicester out of their own academy, and they let him go.
Yeah,
well, they've got they got Adam Thompson from London Irish, fine player on the wing, excellent player. They had Jonah Holmes in their back three, who was lining up for Saracens this weekend. Former Leicester Tiger Alex Lewington that they let go.
Yeah. Oh well, who was playing outside centre for Bristol? Will Hurrell, who they let go. Who came on at eight? Oh, Jordan Crane. Who they let go?
That one you could. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
Well, I mean, you could, but they just won by 30 points or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, that happened, and I do. In the bigger picture, I agree that those players probably were best going elsewhere. Not in every case, but in the majority of cases, probably. Just look at how Leicester played compared to Bristol, and you realise what the problem is. They just don't have a clue. Whereas Bristol seem to know exactly what to do all the time, even if it's wrong.
Well, in this game, they knew what to do all the time. And so Bristol was superb, and their backs and their forwards, their backs, Piatow, Morahan, Leuai, Hurrell, Madigan, Randall, who scored a sensational try, they were given way too much time and space to play what they wanted to do. Yeah, Morahan, so those boys were superb, but it was like Leicester had never watched the way that Pat Lam wants Bristol to play.
Yeah, as if it's going to be a mystery.
Yeah.
Here's Pat Lam with his kicking game again.
Yeah, exactly. So they were given so much time and space, and Bristol exploited it beautifully. That Morahan try, where he stepped and then gassed Johnny May,
was
superb. Absolutely loved it. But Johnny May was kind of exposed because there was no one inside him or outside him. So he was left floundering by a complete lack of discipline and defence.
It does make you wonder, are they doing any forms of analysis at Tigers? Because, I mean, Bristol have been exposed brutally at times.
Yes.
Because if this whatever it is that they are doing doesn't work, they can lose by a lot of points. They have one plan. So that's what you need to do. And you have some of the best players in the Premiership, nay, the world, at your disposal. And yet, you come up with this. And
do you, though? I'm not sure you do anymore. And going back to my point, I just think if you did a flow chart of all the... If you did a little graph of all the players that have gone and come in and you knew what the money was for all those players, I think they've just had terrible value.
Well, I mean,
awful value.
They probably need to start managing the salary cap themselves rather than outsourcing it. So, I mean, that would be one of the things I'd suggest. I think they've got to get rid of this. Their structure, broadly speaking, is correct, but they've got the wrong the wrong people involved. They've given coaching to Anthony Allen, Jordan Murphy, Deacon. Are those guys ready? I mean, I think they'll all be good coaches eventually. But the Leicester Tigers' job is enormous. Second, I would say in English rugby, second only to England is the Leicester Tigers' job.
Historically.
But right now.
Well,
big stadium.
Not with the team that they've got, though. Not with the squad members.
But the squad member is, like I was saying before, mostly the England team. A lot of England players and internationals there.
There's a handful. 4 or 5? It's not mostly. Not most of that 30-man squad is England team.
Most of the back line is. Most of the starting back line is the England backline? Well, sometimes.
Ford Young's May. So yeah. Three. But, so, the only other thing...
Matulangi.
We've talked who played 10 minutes of one game in the last 3 years.
That's all he needs to do. That's all he needs to do.
We've talked more than enough about Leicester Tigers' problems.
Have we?
Well, you, every single time Leicester lose, you go on this rant about how you want to restructure the club.
I would do a better job.
There you go.
Me personally, I would do a better job.
I personally don't believe that JB has set narratives that he likes to flag up as and when there's an opportunity, Phil. I do not accept that.
You're not having it, Tim.
I'm not having that.
Do you guys disagree with me on anything I've just said about Leicester Tigers?
I've no idea what you mean about outsourcing payment of the players.
Oh, right. Well, they don't manage their salary cap in house. They have an outside organisation to do it for them.
Let's not go into that.
Okay, then.
The one last point to make on this was the Eastman high shot. Now, or should I say the two Eastman high shots?
Yes.
Because this was almost identical to the Harlequins game when he was playing for Wasps last year. When he put in two high shots in 2 minutes, and the second one, surprise, surprise, when you go around swinging your arms and hitting them in people's head, got him a red card.
This was more like the contact you get. Do you know when Ted DiBiase does the Million Dollar Dream?
No.
Yes, you do. Like as a classic WWE sleeper. It wasn't like across the chops, but it was that like kind of neck and then stranglehold afterwards. And I think that's, you can't do it, can you?
It was, Wayne Barnes kind of very loosely described it as the head, chest, chin, neck area.
What area is that, by the way?
How big are Kyle Eastman's arms? Yeah.
Head, chest, neck, knee.
Has he had a transplant with Ibn Etzebeth to get arms that can cover the whole of a man's body?
Exactly.
That didn't help Leicester's performance in this game, but Eastman, we've seen it before. And after the first one, it's almost to the point where after the first one, if I were Jordan Murphy, having seen it before, I would have taken him off.
I know.
I know it was only 10, 15 minutes into the game, but you could see it coming.
Sometimes with Eastman, I think, and actually a lot of small players, they need to generate so much force to match opposition players. They have less control.
But you don't if you always go low.
Yeah, but you also want to be dominant on the line, don't you?
But he was nowhere near the line. So I can understand if you're defending on your own try line. Mm. If not, just go around the legs.
Yeah, I'm not defending him. I'm just saying that when you're a smaller man and you're trying to tackle whoever it is at 18 stone, you just need to generate some power and you lose a bit of control.
Yeah, but it's particularly in that second one, it was Madigan had released the ball and was falling backwards. There was no need to generate.
Clean shot on a 10, mate.
So yeah, I can understand that in certain circumstances, not these ones.
No.
So. There you go.
Left his mates.
I just want to highlight one thing. Now, there may be a point to this, but I think what this demonstrates is the way that people are never satisfied.
Uh-oh. So, social media. Twitter.
No. During the internationals, it was outrage. Outrage. Owen Farrell. Outrage. Right?
Yeah.
So, Kyle Eastman gets given a red card.
Yeah.
What? Oh, what? We've got nothing to complain about. Oh, what's going on? Oh, my God. I'm about to implode. Oh, Ian Madigan didn't go off for an HIA. Phew, I've got something to get absolutely outraged about.
Oh, was there some outrage
about
this?
Oh, no, Leicester Tigers tweeted about it, didn't they?
Did they?
Yeah, Leicester Tigers said, so, like, strange how Kyle Eastman gets a red card. I'm paraphrasing. This is how I read it. It's something along the lines of, strange how Kyle Eastman gets redded and yet Madigan doesn't need an HIA. So yeah,
it is an interesting point actually, because he did stay down for quite a while.
But he can be hit in the head and not concussed.
You can be, but if you
but isn't this the, isn't it the doctor's down, call? And we've talking about outsourcing things. That is the doctor's call, and their say is final. And armchair pundits,
exactly right, mate. Well, and also Twitter accounts owned by clubs, the opposition club in particular.
Well, yeah, that's fair.
So, I mean, there is a moral to this story, isn't there? You want a very suggestible doctor to work for your club.
on the suggestible doctors. So did you see the Pickamall stuff last week against Fiji?
No.
So he was...
Fill us in, Phil.
He clearly knocked out twice in the game and played on before then, after playing on, I think, for 10 minutes after the second one, getting taken off. And he started again this week for Montpellier.
Did he?
Yeah.
French have a somewhat cavalier attitude to this.
It doesn't.
Well,
yeah.
In France, like even if, because I think like when players like Johnny Wilkinson or you mentioned him earlier, well, both of them earlier, Joanne Smith,
yeah,
guys like that go over crocked or injured. The second they start working for a French club, they get paid by the government.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
Any injuries or any reason you can't work, the sick benefit gets paid by the government, so the clubs don't actually pay it. So what my point being, they're very laissez-faire about such things.
But they should be, yeah. I'm more thinking they should be happy to like sit him out for a week then.
Yeah, because they're not picking up the tab. That's a good point.
They could just bring in another monstrous South African for a week.
Yeah. Oh, they've signed. They signed Guardiola last week.
Yeah, Montpellier.
How good do Montpellier want to be?
Well, this comes back to the kind of the difference between a proper team and a collection of the best stars in the world.
Yeah.
And from what I've seen, they aren't a proper team.
How? Who? Montpellier or Toulon?
Well, actually, both of them. Both of them right now.
I'd love to know what the atmosphere in those camps are like. And can you assemble all of these world-class players? And how do you mould them into...
Give them near infinite money.
Yeah, near infinite.
In some of the best party towns in the world.
Yes. I mean, it really is. If you look at the map around there.
Yeah, in Toulon, it's phenomenal.
Mm. They're there for the money and the... blazers and champagne
lifestyle.
Oh, what a life. I do, like, it's a serious point. Like, you know, Saracens managed to do it quite well, but they are, there's a lot of guys in there who you could meet on the street and no one would know who they were. Mm. Yeah, and the same with Exeter, like, obviously they're successful. I wonder, yeah, except for maybe that Toulon team that actually won it all, but everyone says that they were complete anomaly. Anyhow, because of the quality of the characters that they had.
Yeah.
You mentioned Saracens there, the Elliot Daly to Saracens rumours.
Yes. Is this true? Is it on?
I don't know.
Yeah, I believe that's on.
Hmm. Well, Marcelo Bosch isn't getting any younger, is he?
Nope.
It'd be an interesting signing. Can't really see that you need him in the back three.
No, I can't either.
I mean, having Goode and Williams as your first two choice fullbacks, you don't need
any... I can't really see him at 13 either, because Lozowski's
Lozowski,
class.
Yeah.
I mean, he's every bit as good, I think.
It gives options then. So you've got Lozowski who can cover 10, 12, 13, and Daly as an out-and-out 13.
And don't forget Goode, who started 10 this week.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, plus, and maybe that's another thing, which is maybe you don't need quite as much money if you're going to go and win things.
Yes. Well, that does segue nicely into the Allianz Park game this week, Saracens versus Wasps.
Sorry, I hate to interrupt you because something has come across my mind about money. Yeah, someone's in the Premiership allegedly wants to pay Kieran Reid £1 million after the World Cup.
There is no way that Kieran Reid 5 years ago
was worth half a million.
Was worth whatever the top salary in the world was at that stage.
Yes.
Kieran Reid today is not worth £1 million.
Yeah, David Flatman, I think, tweeted about it. Who is the club that wants to pay Kieran Reid £1 million? And I can't think of anyone who needs him or anyone. Why would you pay that unless it was a decision from owners?
Well, that's a good question.
Tim?
I don't know. I'm assuming Sale have money in the cap and have lots and lots of cash now, and they're going to start spending more and more.
It will not be Kieran Reid. I'm telling you that. Well, actually,
no, I can't imagine why it would be.
If you got Jean-Luc Dupree and John O'Ross.
And Josh Strauss.
And Strauss.
I would imagine it would be South, but judging by the current trend, any players going to Sale will be South African.
I hope so.
Local lads.
Local lads, I mean. Yeah, so we might see a very old, very expensive number 8, because that will work well.
Yeah, with another year of international rugby under his belt, age 34/35.
Well, Northampton haven't replaced King Louis.
They haven't, have they?
No.
But they, if there's a team that does not need any more back row, it would be Northampton. They just seem to have a lot of generic sixes.
Yeah, kind of six and a halves.
Yeah, six and a halves. They've got more six and a halves than they can, you know, they can handle.
Well, certainly then they can play on the pitch at any one time.
Interesting. Sorry, Phil, I interrupted you.
Oh, back to we're talking about Saracens and Elliot Daly.
Yes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Have a quick chat about the game. So this was close. It was 12-6 up until 50 or 60 minutes. And then the changes that Saracens were able to make, the guys they were able to bring off the bench, managed to kind of eventually squeeze Wasps. And squeeze a Wasps team that hadn't been a particular attacking threat, but had stayed in the game from a couple of very good long-range Elliot Daly penalties and from a Wasps dominant scrum, winning penalty after penalty.
Is it me? Do Wasps seem to have a disproportionate amount of injuries? I mean, they always seem to be lurching from injury crisis to injury crisis.
I hadn't thought of it at the moment. But...
Well, like, you know, there's two hookers missing. They've had emergency props rock in. They've signed the lad from Jersey, whatever his name is. They've got Campagnaro Bourgeois playing on the wing.
Bourgeois came in. I'm sure he came in over the summer.
I thought he was...
Campagnaro was an emergency sign-in.
I actually thought he was... never mind. They've got another lad on the wing called... Oh, what the hell's his name?
Ross Neil.
He's had some come in.
Yeah, he's playing quite well.
He's doing all right. But they always seem to be doing this.
They like any club, because Saracens have got some injuries at the moment as well. It's not like everyone's completely flush. This was a good game, and it was a good test for Saracens, and they came through very well. And one of the main things in this, so Elliot Daly slotted two very good long range penalties, took them really really well. He then, have you seen Ezekwe's try?
No, I didn't get that far through my highlights.
Yeah.
So this is, and we were talking before about how well Mike Brown played at 15 with his with his unusual for him. New haircut, but Daly. So there's a wasp turnover the ball inside Saracens 22. Lazowski puts a massive boot on it, boots it almost 80 meters, and Daly tracks back, picks up the ball, beats I think it was Tompkins, and goes to throw a 20 meter pass to Willie LaRue to put the ball
on his own line.
Safe on his own line. Ezekwe, fair play to Ezekwe, he read it perfectly because there were two players closing down Daly, and Ezekwe was like the third player along, so he just gambled and went for Willie LaRue instead. And Daly's pass dipped. Ezekwe picked it up off his toes and just fell over the line. So it does highlight, this weekend has highlighted the strength of Mike Brown and also the potential weakness of Elliot Daly when he is in that 15 role. I know he wasn't playing 15 at the time, but he was covering that space.
Yeah. I don't think he's a particularly good 15, as it happens. I agree, Phil. There you go.
Have you not seen it? You agree.
I completely agree with everything that you say.
Perfect.
I do think it's interesting that they chose not to play Lazowski at 10. I think that was probably one of my more interesting takeaways from this.
Because it was interesting, especially after Liam Williams dropped out.
Yep.
And... you had Nick Tompkins, who's been playing very well at 13 for the past couple of weeks. So you could have really easily shuffled it around to put Tompkins at 13. Good drops back to 10 and Lazowski goes... Sorry, Good drops back to 15 and Lazowski 10.
You know, I look at the England squad, just going back to England because I'm a little bit obsessed at the moment. And
no.
They seem to be... I mean, the Tigers players that are in there shouldn't be in there, but they just don't have enough Saracens players. Good, Lazowski should be playing all the time. Barrett should be in there. Just Good and Barrett alone make an enormous difference to England.
So hold on, JB. Hold on. So I understand your narrative to want to try and resurrect downfall 2018, which is now in tatters. And
is it?
tails off between your legs on that one.
Why so?
Unless you're going to start downfall 2019. Well, because it's December and England just had a good autumn, mate.
No, they didn't have a good autumn. Who told you that?
Okay, you predicted one win in four.
Wait. Let's just investigate that. Who told you that they had a good autumn? Did you make that up? Because
my eyes, three wins out of four and a 1 point loss to New Zealand.
Because
compared to JB's downfall,
the only two serious teams that they played right all autumn.
Oh, we're not going over this again.
Hang on, but you just did go over it again. But that's exactly what you did. So they found that their captain has horrible deficiencies. They nearly lost the South Africa game. There's only two serious games that they had, and the other two teams were rubbish, and they came fifth or fourth in Six Nations. So far from it.
Okay, so the other two teams were rubbish. Well, all I'm pointing out is you said they'd only
beat
Japan.
By the way...
Anyway, so downfall 2018's in tatters.
Japan? No, it's not, is it? Japan, we're actually beating them at half-time.
All of a sudden, you're saying... Games are 80 minutes long, last I checked. But you're saying that Alex Lazowski should be starting for England every game.
No,
what's your evidence to make that judgment?
Gould
and Lazowski should be playing for England.
What they'd say on the Reddit forums now is you're strawmanning Tim. Though he should definitely be involved and Gould should definitely
be involved.
Gould isn't.
Lazowski is, but yeah. you said Gould and Lazowski. They don't have enough Saracens in the England squad.
Lazowski, Barrett, Gould. Lazowski, Barrett, Gould should all be involved continuously.
Okay.
There you go. Happy?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Excellent. It's an opinion.
Does it make sense, Phil?
It's an opinion.
Does it make sense?
It is an opinion.
No. This isn't your newly branded rugby fence podcast, Phil. Is there a good point there?
What is your question? Does it make sense
to have those three involved?
Do those English words make perfect sense?
Would I do that? No, I would not.
Why?
Why? Because I think the squad you've got at the moment is better. I think Barrett is a very good player in the system he plays, but he doesn't offer enough for international rugby.
Interesting.
And I've not seen enough of Lazowski at the highest level to justify a place ahead of someone like, say, Slade, or when he comes back in, Jonathan Joseph.
I've seen enough
Do those words make sense?
I would say I've seen enough of all three of those at the absolute highest level of club rugby to say you're both completely wrong. And if anyone's weaving a narrative here, it's you two.
I think we need to... I think, JB, what I'm going to say is you need a new catchphrase. Downfall 2018 is done. It's on the heap of ashes now. You need to find a new one.
Of course it is, mate. It's December.
But, you know, you just said it's very much still alive.
No, it's very much still correct.
Okay.
It's very, very much correct. it was correct and in the bank after the Six Nations.
Okay, let's move on, because I think we've done enough of this. The other games this weekend, so the two Premiership games we've not touched on, Gloucester had
a quick interlude before you do that, Phil.
Yes.
Firstly, Tim, that it's coming up to Christmas, right?
Yes.
And, you know, if I can just mention to people, they might want to just have a word with Santa Claus that for just £4, you could get a fantastic stocking present / present for someone you care about, or indeed treat yourself.
Like to what? To what sort of gift?
To an amazing shave.
What a good idea.
To an amazing shave from Cornerstone, the original mail order razor company that all these other companies are trying to copy right now. But unlike, right, and you see, it's not just about the quality of the aluminium weighty engraved shaft that I like of Cornerstone. It's the fact that unlike these other companies, they clearly don't care about the environment, because Cornerstone are going, no, we're not going to do plastic. We're doing metal.
Yeah,
we're not going to fill up the oceans with plastic razors like some of these pretenders that are copying Cornerstone. So get the original, get the best. Six beautifully German precision-engineered razors in a presentation box, a weighty aluminium shaft that you get for free. Get that engraved with yours or someone you care about's initials if it's for a present. And for £4, you can get that sent to you. Perfect Christmas present or a treat for yourself. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or...
Egg 10, check out.
Yes.
Perfect.
Oh, the only other interlude is, did you see Nakadrotsky, the South African, chased out some robbers from his home, got shot three times, survived, but the robbers are now in custody.
Good. I'm glad they got caught, and I'm glad that he's in a stable condition.
Yeah. Yeah. All the best. Hopefully he'll get well soon.
Yeah. I mean, who would want to... Was Oz Durant involved in some...
Yes, Oz Durant was there as well.
Horrific story. Horrific.
If you were going to pick one household in South Africa to not try and rob at that point, it would have been that one.
Be pretty high on my list.
Yes.
Anyway.
Any more games? Oh, yeah, Sale played.
So they did. We don't need to talk about that game too much. It was a horrible game of rugby.
You were there. What did you see?
I saw more handling errors than I'd like. I saw a Bath team that looked very, very nervous and edgy and a bit anxious. They're clearly, I think the pressure is beginning to weigh on them a little bit. They're not fluent. The weather didn't help that. Sale, I think, are starting to build something. And they haven't won away from home since March in the league.
Yeah,
and I think they're starting to build, and I think almost once the international window was out of the way, sales season begun. They started slowly last season and finished strong, and I think they're going to move up the table. Bath look edgy.
So there was one thing, and I'm not going to tell you why I think this because I just can't really, but I think Sale are going to. Well, I said it at the start of this game in a private conversation. Sort of happened, and I think it's going to be a pattern going forward. I think Sale are going to concede a lot of turnover ball, and I think that will become apparent. Maybe we'll see how they go next week. But certainly their next Premiership game, I think they will be affected by it. And if they
concede a lot of turnover ball,
concede
why?
It's something that they're doing in the way that they play, and I just don't think it's going to be particularly good. Good for them. But I would just say, watch them at the breakdown.
Okay.
So that's all that I'll say. But today, I think they conceded about six turnovers. With the average turnovers is three a game. They conceded six.
Well, but they're playing against Bath, who get more turnovers than anyone.
That is absolutely true. And they had Underhill and they had Lowe.
They conceded 16.
I was going to say six, I think by about 40 minutes.
Okay.
So, yeah, a hell of a lot. But Bath also conceded a lot, and also weather didn't help.
I was going to say part of that was just it took Sale till about 60 minutes to get beyond five phases.
Yeah. But the defence was good.
The defence was
excellent. Defence was outstanding.
Yeah.
Really good. And do you know that they've appointed a new director of high performance at Sale, which is one of those bits of news which just kind of went under the radar.
Have they?
Yeah, he did some job for Wigan Warriors. So Wigan have basically...
What does that mean?
That's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it.
Let's know what that job means. What
it is basically...
What significance is it to anyone?
Yeah, it's an overarching role where you are monitoring the links between the first team, the academy, and also, in Sale Sharks' case, Sale FC. So you're basically... The top of the pyramid across the whole organisation. Which I thought was a very interesting bit of news because you would have thought a senior appointment like that might have been mentioned on some of the rugby channels, but it wasn't.
Well, apart from this one.
Except for this one.
JB's Sale Sharks podcast. Yeah.
Well, I guess the nearest equivalent to that would be Stuart Hooper.
Hoops.
A general manager. I do love these new jobs that are coming up. High performance director, general manager. What happened to coach?
Who needs a coach?
Who needs coaches?
Well, if there was one podcast that I would have bet very good money that would have mentioned that news, it would have been ours, and you just fulfilled it.
Nailed it.
There you go. The other games. So, won't go into too much detail, but Gloucester had a good, solid, expected win against Worcester Warriors. Two of the standout players in this, Freddie Clark.
Big boy.
Big bullocking back row, and my boy, Ollie Thorley. Ollie Thorley is unplayable at the moment.
He's good, isn't he?
He is phenomenal.
It's ridiculous.
What? I mean, I know I've never said this before, but I'm going to say it again. What are Leicester going to give up for Ollie Thorley this summer?
They don't have it. Yeah. They just don't have it. Whatever they've got, they've not got it.
Welford Road, take it.
Can I just say, this is the most difficult, worst... I mean, some might argue best, but it's certainly the most difficult season for fantasy rugby draft out of the
Tell me about it.
By a mile, because players that would be absolute bankers are just getting no points.
Yeah,
and like, players that you've probably never heard of before this season are absolutely dominating.
My first pick, Christian Wade.
no longer plays the game.
No longer in the country. Fortunately, I did manage to pick up Ollie Thorley on a free 3 weeks ago, and he scored 42, followed by 27, followed by 41. So,
and you picked up Alex Dombrandt.
Dombrandt's a good pickup because he's a lock as well. It's a gem of a pickup, that. This week I scored 150. JB, did you make positive figures?
I'm not sure. I haven't checked.
Yeah. You've been reassessed to 1.5 points.
That is astounding.
One hundredth of the points that I scored this week.
Jay, you're letting us down because we are the highest ranked league.
Well, we were.
In all the fantasy rugby draft. Our whole league average points. You're dragging us right down.
I've got to say, that is a devastating contribution to our league, isn't it, really?
It really is, JB. Please get your act together.
Yeah, no second row. All my back three weren't starting. And then Kyle Eastman got a red card. Cheers. Oh, and also AJ McGinty's having shoulder surgery. Selfish. But he'll be back in a few weeks.
Yes.
Back after Europe. Fit and fighting.
Oh, no, I've got Rob Dupria.
He's going home, mate, so.
Yeah. He was only ever short term. Final Premiership.
3 months, anyway.
Final Premiership game. Newcastle Falcons got a very unlikely victory in the... Did you see this?
No, was it...
87th minute. You remember the 89th minute against Montpellier?
Yep.
Yep.
Now it's 87th minute.
87th, 88th minute for the try and conversion.
Tell you what, about Falcons, like, they've got some grit about them.
Oh, yeah. And it was... Guess who it was? If you're going to pick a Falcon who is performing superbly at the moment...
Gary Graham.
No. Oh. Try again.
I certainly Falcon, I know. Certainly Falcon anyone knows. Or Johnny Wilkinson.
There's one Falcon that...
Johnny Williams!
No.
Many people will have known after the Autumn Internationals, JB.
Go on. Why do I feel stupid?
Mark Wilson.
Oh, Mark Wilson, of course, yeah.
Mark Wilson, after playing... I think he played every minute of every game for England. He picked up a match award against South Africa. He scored in the 87th minute.
Good lad.
To win the game with a Toby Flood conversion against Northampton, away at Northampton.
Isn't it weird what happens when you pick players on form, eh? Isn't it weird how that works?
Incredible.
Turns out players that play well for their clubs play well in the internationals. I never realised that until this.
At which point, cut to picture of Don Armand sat in shower, fully clothed, rocking back and forward, crying.
Yeah. Or Alex Dombrandt.
Dombrandt. Alex Dombrandt, who sent three good games in his...
Get him in! I don't like to be reactionary. Hey, I tell you what...
Hey, Boise didn't even have that many when he got called up to the England squad.
True.
Can I just say this? I'm going to make it a little bit about me for a second.
What?
Yeah,
really?
I interviewed Ted Hill this week.
Young Englishman Ted Hill.
I have seldom been so impressed with a young man.
Really?
Unbelievably good talker.
Did you didn't meet him in person, did you?
No, I didn't. I interviewed him.
He's a big boy, isn't he?
Yes, he's enormous. And his try scoring record is also enormous.
Did he nip to the Worcester Academy House to use that super fast Wi-Fi?
No, he wasn't. I think he was calling in from home. Otherwise, the Wi-Fi would have been super clear. But I did ask him. And tell me what you think of this. He's on an academy contract, right? So it's like, what have you done with your England money? Because that must be like a nice little chunk if you're on whatever academy contract's paying out.
Yeah.
You must have doubled your money in 80 minutes.
Yeah.
How cool. Yeah. That must be a very cool feeling.
Yes. Yeah. But he's probably, especially at that stage, it's probably like a massive, massive motivator for that not to be the last England cap for him to work hard.
Even aged 30, playing, well, we're not, you know, having dropped out of like national leagues and just playing for my local team. I in my 30s, I was still excited by stash day.
Yeah,
Ted Hill getting that bag of England stash.
Imagine Gary Graham.
Yeah, Gary Graham, England, Scotland. You're going for the full house.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually think he might be the only England player to receive a match day fee and not pay higher rate tax.
You might be right.
That's a great start. Who is the only player to get a match fee and not pay higher rate tax?
Amazing.
Yeah.
There you go.
So you can catch up on Wednesday.
Yes.
I've got some news.
Okay.
How about that? Pro 14, because we've not mentioned anything from Pro 14 yet.
Oh, Ulster had a great win.
Ulster did have a great win.
A win.
This is one of those things. There is a reason, right, that so many people are very, very cards close to their chest when it comes to predicting things. Because there was a certain journalist, I can't remember his name, but he tweeted out, Dragons v Leinster teams have been confirmed. How many names do you recognise in the Leinster lineup?
Oh yeah.
Right. So should I...
no. And then went on to say, I think Dragons have got a shot here.
Great chance for Dragons.
Yeah.
So here we go. Let's have a read of the Leinster names. Hugo Keenan.
Nope.
Adam. Yeah, number 8.
Huh?
He's a number 8, isn't he?
He's a 15.
Oh, 15. Oh no. He was
in...
no.
Don't worry. You'll.
Oh no, that's Deegan I'm thinking of.
Okay. Adam Byrne, well, we know him, don't we?
Yeah, we know. Yeah.
Jimmy O'Brien.
Nope.
Connor O'Brien.
Nope.
No. These are Pro Evo names. These are randomly generated computer names. Dave Kearney.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carney, yeah.
Yeah.
Ross Byrne, yeah. James yeah. Gibson Park, yeah.
Yeah.
Ed Byrne.
Good comedian, Mock the Week.
Yep, that's the one. James Tracy.
Yes.
Michael yeah. Michael Bent.
Yes.
Yes.
Ross Maloney.
No.
Scott Fardy.
He's played a little bit, hasn't he?
Yeah. Josh Murphy.
Yeah.
Scott Penny and Kaelin Doris.
Yeah.
And what was the score then?
Well, yeah, as you'd expect, the Dragons won.
Big win for the Dragons, was it?
Let me just get the exact score.
Shall I tell you?
Yes, please.
Dragons 10, Leinster Academy B team 59.
That's outstanding. Just at Dragons.
At Dragons.
At Dragons. I don't know what to suggest, really. Don't know.
Here's another stat, which got tweeted to us.
Oh.
How many league points have Glasgow Warriors dropped at Scotstoun under Dave Rennie?
Oh, wow. League point. Well, they won again, but were they at Scotstoun?
Out of a maximum 75 league points in 15 games, how many league points have they dropped under
I'm
Dave
gonna
Rennie?
Say 5.
I'm going to say they've won
15. Oh, I don't know.
I was going to say they've won every game at home, but they've probably missed out on losing bonus points 3 times.
Phil, look at that... absolutely nailed it. They've got 72 out of 75 points home under Dave Rennie.
Pretty.
There you go.
Pretty good.
They beat Scarlets this week. So they did only score 2 tries, but they beat Scarlets, losing Alex Allen after 19 minutes.
So red.
For red, yeah. So when Jordan Murphy, in his post-match interview, was complaining about the Reds ruining the game, if your team is well set up and disciplined and understands systems, Reds don't ruin games.
They do a bit.
So is this game ruined?
It's not the point.
No, that's exactly the point I'm making.
No, it isn't the point.
Reds can ruin games.
Yeah, I mean, there's more of a chance of it ruining they can, than not.
No, they can ruin games if your team is not properly prepared.
No, I disagree. I don't think it's the preparation that makes a difference. I think it's the willingness of the players. Because when... And also, it's the inability of your opposition to understand their systems enough to actually beat you.
So do you think that Scarlets don't understand their systems well?
Evidently. I mean, you know, you would say, wouldn't you?
The last couple of years,
but you would say, wouldn't you, that a one-man advantage to a team like Scarlets would, you know, they should be able to.
Should be massive. Should be absolutely massive.
You would like to think that every single team trains man down, man up. And practices these scenarios so it's all automatic when it happens. What they do and how they cope.
I'd like to agree with you, right? I would like to think that they train for all sorts, like the SAS. They're well drilled on absolutely everything. But thinking about the times that I've been to watch live training, I've never seen any team train with 14. Have you?
I've played in teams that have trained with 14.
I've played in teams that were standard.
Yeah,
standard.
You always knew exactly from a scrum. if we're down a man, this is how we'll defend.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know
seven will have fly half or whatever. You know what I mean?
I know what to do, but I've never. I'm just saying, I've never seen it in a, you know, when you go to the like press day and watch training. I've never seen him play train with 14. No, you were training 14 on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Really?
You prepare. It would be, when I say a regular basis, we would do two training sessions a week, but it would be probably once a month.
Hold on, Phil, a second.
We'd cover it.
Sorry, JB, you're saying you don't do that at Toc H. What kind of coach are you?
No, we coach not to get sent off.
Oh, yeah, you coach to...
you've got the preventative.
Yeah.
You coach your players to have enormous heads and really short legs, don't you?
Exactly. It does strike me as like one of those things that like the opportunity cost of training with 14 outweighs, you know, just actually doing your lineouts or doing your normal moves.
No, because you do it on top of that stuff. And it's not a huge amount of time from my
And how do you decide which guy goes off?
Well, it depends because you would cover. So it's if you've got an inside back, an outside back, a
bingo
row.
Machine. That's what I would use. Well, because like if your fly half goes, then what?
You'll always have someone else who's stepping
up. I'll just give you one little example. We don't need to get too specific. So if you're down, if a winger's off the field, you've got a back off the field.
Yeah.
Then from a scrum, I remember we used to have a move. If we were down to 14 with a back off the field, scrum half wouldn't stand at scrum half. He would stand in the defensive line on the blind side.
Ooh.
For example.
But defence, I think, is easier with 14. Attack is a nightmare. Particularly if a halfback's gone.
But you always replace a halfback like off the bench.
You're not allowed to.
You'll take a back row. So if your scrum half gets sent off, you'll take a back row off, say, or a winger off.
What, as a permanent sub?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe.
See, JB Tockett should be training these kind of things.
And it's things like, again, when you have a man off with a yellow card, you know that you're going to maul it more and you're going to take your time and you're going to slow things down and kick it a bit more, just try and eat the clock up. All these things you get that you talk about. So yeah, anyway,
I know them all.
Dave Rennie is obviously excellent at doing that, and Glasgow are very well drilled. Because
yeah,
I completely agree. Glasgow are a magnificent outfit. As are Treviso, who beat the Kings.
Kings away.
Big result that.
4 tries, 22 points. Just the solitary conversion. No penalties.
Overrated.
Just do what you need.
Who needs them?
Bonus point win with 22 points.
Benetton, it's almost like a mirror of last year, chasing down Ulster. Savagely chasing them down.
Uh-oh.
You can't run forever, Phil.
Uh-oh.
Hey, we should get on to talking about this weekend. It's a big weekend of European rugby.
Yes, Sale off to... are they going to... Somewhere in France. Winemaking region.
Bordeaux,
thank you.
One of the winemaking regions.
Yes, one of many. So which games should we talk about first?
Should we just do the Champions Cup?
What? Okay. Well, you don't want to talk about the games that aren't on TV? Which nobody can watch. You don't want to talk about those, no?
I'm okay.
All right.
I'm okay.
They're all available to watch on if you're into betting and such things.
Oh, are they?
I believe so.
Yeah,
I think.
Normally if you've got money in various different betting companies' accounts, I won't name anyone.
Yeah, so you could watch potentially Gloucester Pow, you could potentially watch Harlequins Treviso.
Pow.
That's a good game. Northampton Dragons, Ospreys Stade Francais, Bristol La Rochelle should be a belter. Like, genuinely, that should be an absolute belting game. Bordeaux Sale, absolute belter. Right, Champions Cup,
here we go. Friday night. And let me just get the tables up as well.
By the way, Friday night, a game which has Challenge Cup Britain all over it for the last 20 years. Edinburgh versus Glasgow.
Yeah? Edinburgh versus Glasgow?
What are you talking about?
Sorry, Edinburgh versus Newcastle.
Yes.
That absolutely is. So should we go through this pool by pool so we can talk through the position?
Okay, that's probably more sensible.
So the game you just mentioned is Pool 5, which is... So Newcastle and Edinburgh are the top two teams ahead of Toulon and Montpellier, who are the bottom two teams, which is quite remarkable.
Wow! I mean,
so knowing the way it works, and I'm working this game, that got selected the way that the TV games and everything get picked. That's been picked as like a big game, big televised game, which you wouldn't have predicted
No.
before the start of the season.
Not even close.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. But it will be an extremely high quality game.
Because if, particularly if Newcastle win this, so either team, if they win, they're well poised for the group. If Newcastle win, they're 3 from 3.
This is outrageous.
And only need kind of, well, one more win or a few losing bonus points to actually go through.
And if Toulon lose to Montpellier, we could just see Toulon just give it up. Then,
give up.
We?
Give up.
And then, basically free passage for either Newcastle or Edinburgh, which would be awesome.
So predictions for that game?
I have no idea. I genuinely don't. Newcastle can be great, but Edinburgh can score some bloody fantastic tries.
Newcastle, who are currently bottom of the Gallagher Premiership.
Yeah. But their European performances have been brilliant. Yeah.
Yep.
And, that win against Northampton, I mean, they are bottom of the table. I bet it doesn't feel like a bottom of the table club.
Yeah, absolutely not. It is also important to say that these are the head-to-head games.
Yeah.
So they go back-to-back, the reverse fixtures the following week.
I think Edinburgh will shade it.
Give me Newcastle. Don't know why, but give me Newcastle.
In tight games, I think it will be tight and close. I'd always err towards a home win. So
yeah.
I agree, it's going to be a really tasty one.
Pair of home wins here.
Okay. So then the other Friday night, let's stick with Pool 5 because, the other game is Toulon-Montpellier in Toulon. Toulon had a good win at the weekend. I can't remember who it was against. So, give me Toulon. So 2 home wins in Pool 5.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but just as we're talking about France, I know a lot of stuff happened last week. A lot of water went under the bridge. We never spoke about getting changed in France and how bizarre that entire situation was.
Oh, my word!
I'm not sure we should speak about that, especially not...
No, you've already paid your Airbnb money, Phil. Nothing's going to happen to that. You're not going to get charged extra for just explaining what happened.
I don't want to get charged...
I mean, I know the general rule of what goes on tour stays on tour, but I think we can make an exception here.
I'm not worried about getting charged extra. I'm worried about the French authorities getting involved.
Well, it wouldn't be on you, mate. That would be on the fella.
I was thinking about this the other day. It just came back to me like, oh my God, that actually happened. So we were early, weren't we, for our Airbnb?
Well, not really. I'd kind of told him we'd be arriving at... It was like 2 o'clock that we arrived.
Now, at this point...
PM's a pretty reasonable time to arrive at an Airbnb, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, at this point, I'm hoping that those two young lads that worked for that man were his sons. Because if not, this was an open and shut case of child labour.
Yes. Yep.
And then...
So we arrived with our bags and we were on a tight turnaround to get over to Monaco for the World Rugby Awards. So we had to shower, change, iron, get in, dump our bags off and get out within an hour.
Less than that. We had a half an hour window to get for the three of us to do all of that.
To get a train and then to get our press accreditation. But yeah, it was bizarre because we basically said to the fella, look, we need to get changed. Can we just have showers? Someone's get changed and we'll go. And he said, yeah, sure. And then he tried to be as helpful as he possibly could. Whereas at the same time being incredibly inappropriate and unhelpful. So, example, I'm trying to shave in...
Before you get into this, what I would have said is that the way that I would have, if I was running his Airbnb, the way I would have done it is gone, oh, I see, they're in a hurry, I'll let them get on with what they're doing, wait till they go to Monaco, and then I'll go in and fluff up the pillows.
Yeah, well, here's the weirdest thing that happened to me. I know weirder things happen to you. The weirdest thing that happened to me is I'm standing naked in a towel trying to have a shave. And because the shower was on, the mirror has steamed up. So the French fella, this 40, 50-year-old French fella, barges into the bathroom where I am, explains to me that there's steam on the mirror, which obviously I can see looking into the mirror. Turns on the hairdryer and stands next to me, hair drying the mirror as I'm trying to shave. He's got the hairdryer over my shoulder, right, as I'm trying to shave. And then I walk back into your room, and you two are getting changed. You're semi hot, semi naked. And there's two lads. Literally, one has a feather duster, running around cleaning books.
But the lads were, they were definitely minors.
Yes, 12.
Yeah, that kind of region.
Well, they might not. They were definitely, yeah. No, I don't think it's that young. We're probably talking, they look like A-level students earning a bit of extra money.
No, they're younger than that, mate.
Do you reckon?
Younger than that.
But definitely. All I remember, because like, again, we were on the clock and had to do this, and this was technically like our apartment. And I just remember Phil, as he was putting his underwear on, going, is this weird?
The answer is yes. Yes, it was weird.
Yes. But it made us get changed quicker, so every cloud.
It did. I wasn't hanging around in there.
Yeah. So,
on that, the other Friday night game, Pool 4.
Oh, yes, Pool 4.
So
We're gonna get found on someone's hard drive. Little police bust.
Would
what
not
these pictures here?
Would not surprise me.
Who was staying in the sex den? Pool 4, yeah.
So right now, Pool 4 is topped by Racing 92. Leicester are in second place with one win. Ulster in third with one win. And Scarlets yet to win.
Who did Leicester beat? Scarlets, wasn't it? Of all teams.
Yeah. So.
Oh my God, double header against Racing for Leicester.
Yeah, that's not going to go well.
Good night.
So on Friday night, Scarlets host Ulster, which I imagine will be a Scarlets win.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same pool on Sunday, the 3:15 kickoff on Sunday, Racing host Leicester, which is going to be one-way traffic. Yes.
So in the last weekend of games, do you think Ulster versus Leicester will be the game of shame? To see who says
wooden spoon.
Yeah.
It could well be.
I agree.
Yes, unfortunately. Okay, Pool 3.
Mm-hmm.
Pool 3 is Lyon, Glasgow...
Doubleheader.
Saracens and Cardiff. So right now, Saracens play 2-1-2, top the group. Glasgow and Cardiff are both 1-1 each in second and third, and Lyon have lost 2-2, bottom of the group.
I can't see Lyon doing anything constructive. I thought they were going to be really good to start the season. Just looking at the names they've got... You know, they do very well in the top 14. They're a big physical outfit, but they've been found wanting against both Saracens and Cardiff. So
Lyon host Glasgow.
Yeah. There'll
be some pride in this.
There will be, but they also got turned over by Cardiff at whatever it is, Stade Garland or whatever the hell they play at.
True.
So they might win it, but I'm going with Glasgow.
Give me Glasgow.
And Cardiff will lose to Saracens, but... They are a tricky outfit. And they've got players like Thomas Williams, who I rate immensely highly. And you never know. I think they'll score some, but I think Saracens will batter them.
And the mighty Ulster only just snuck past Cardiff this weekend, just gone. So, obviously a tough opposition.
Very tough. Much like that. I mean, I think very much the same thing with the Kings.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's Pool 3.
Oh, this is... Pool 2 is interesting.
So Pool 2... In first place, we've got Munster, but they've won one, drawn one. They drew with Exeter, of course, at Sandy Park. Second place, we've got Cast, who've won one and got one bonus point. Third place is Gloucester, won one, lost one. And in fourth place is Exeter. So this right now is the tightest group of all of them and probably the least predictable.
Mm-hmm.
So in this, we've got 1 o'clock kickoff on the Saturday. We've got Exeter hosting Gloucester. And then the 1 o'clock kickoff on the Sunday, or one of the 1 o'clock kickoffs on the Sunday, is Munster hosting Cast. So that's going to be a Munster home win and an Exeter home win.
I'm not convinced at all.
With Exeter home win.
Yeah, and it's not that I'm, you know, I've seen one game of Exeter live and now I think, oh, okay, away you go. I think Gloucester are actually really, really good.
They are.
And they can score from anywhere. The difference with this Gloucester team, previous Gloucester teams, is a bit of extra South African beef, and the younger players like Pelledri are getting stronger and stronger and stronger. So I do think Exeter will win, but it's going to be much tighter. And if this is at King's home, I'd probably give Gloucester slight favourites tags.
If it was at King's home, I would agree. Actually, as it's not, and Exeter. So their big focus, there was talk of, so having won the league, they want to do more in Europe. And I think even though they've had not the best start, I think they will be really, really focusing on this. So I
This is why they rested up all those big names.
So who will come back for them this weekend? Because the problem with Exeter, every time I say, I don't know who their starting team are, because I think they pick their starting team week to week based on who on like the best matchups. So who do you think is going to come into this side?
Slade, Hepburn, Moon will all come in.
Yeah, Moon definitely. So in the pack,
Woodburn, is he fit again?
Don't think so. Knowles out as well. Simmons is obviously out as well.
So Almond and Ewers, I mean, I would start those two almost for every opposition. Yep. Kvesic probably starts again.
Yeah.
Johnny Hill, is he fit?
Don't know about
Skinner. Hill.
Skinner could come in.
Yeah.
Steenson.
Steeno, oh, tell two further stories from Quinns, and they're only short. I've met a lot of rugby players now, and you know, I'm not really particularly fazed by them, except for when it's Gareth Steenson. he is star quality through and through. In my mind, the most storied player in the Premiership.
If you go and watch a game, I don't know what you saw after the game, but I when Exeter played at Bath earlier in the season, I was walking back to the car park and I walked down the left-hand touchline of the wreck. Gareth Steenson was just leaning on the advertising hoardings, chatting to some friends, family or Exeter fans, I don't know who'd huddled there, with a can of Guinness.
He's cool, isn't he? He's so cool. And you know, with his new haircut, he looks even cooler than I originally thought he was.
Yeah, he does.
He's amazing.
He was going a bit Teen Wolf a few weeks ago, but he sort of tidied it up, not quite so unkempt. He looks good.
Yeah, he's got, you know, in the same way that he plays rugby with perfect balance, his game management has perfect balance, so does his hair, which is very rare in Exeter. And the other one, this is a... this is quite funny, actually. I might just put a little marker on this in case you think I should edit it out, Tim. At the end of the game, there was a child in a wheelchair. And Joe Marler was talking to this child for the best part of what felt like 3 or 4 minutes. Doing the really, really nice, you know, the nice rugby player thing, like what you should be doing. Then a guy who will remain nameless, an ex-Harlequins player, turns around, comes around the corner, photographer in hand, sort of interrupts the conversation, has a picture with the kid, and then scorpers. There we go. And I actually admire that. I mean, that is social media gold.
Down to business.
Actually, let's just make sure it's not on his social media, because then everyone will know who it is. I think we're good.
Yeah, you'll be okay.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Right. Final bit, so we can finish this marathon pod. Pool one currently top in pool one to lose the resurgence of the sleeping giant of European rugby. To lose have won from two. In second place, Leinster have won one, lost one. Third place, Bath, who have got picked up a single draw, and fourth place, Wasps, who've also picked up a single draw. So relatively tight pool at the moment, but looking like Toulouse and Leinster are strongest. So 3:15 on Saturday, Bath host Leinster, which I can't see going particularly well for Bath. And at 5:30, Wasps host Toulouse, which is a more interesting prospect.
Mm.
Toulouse will be focusing on this.
Toulouse are going to smash Wasps.
Do you think?
Absolutely smash them, yeah.
It's just the travel. The French teams just historically travel.
Have you seen
so badly.
Toulouse in the league this year?
I've not looked at it for a couple of weeks.
We saw Toulouse in Europe at Bath, which is probably the closest comparison.
Yeah.
Okay, so Toulouse are second top at the moment, having won 8 from 11.
Yeah, they're smashing people.
Yeah, they've only lost 2, so won 8 from 11, drawn 1. So
I'm going to Toulouse big time.
Big time.
Big time, yeah.
There you go. That's it.
Toulouse marginal favourites, but away from home, I agree with Phil. It's not cut and dried.
Was it only the start of the season we were saying how good it would be if Toulouse were brilliant again?
Yeah.
I hope we see it. I really do.
Well,
let's go and have a life.
They beat Leinster.
No, that's not. This is my life.
I want to go and get some sleep.
Yeah. Why, are you short of sleep this weekend?
It's been a tough week.
Why? Where have you been?
Following last week, for last weekend's action, I only actually stopped drinking this Friday.
No, you
that
didn't.
That was the first dry day I had. And I've been down in London all week. So
How'd you crack your phone? How'd you smash your phone up?
Well, I smashed it up. So I dropped it in Rome after one too many Negronis. And then all of a sudden this morning, so I was hungover waking up in a hotel in London. My alarm went off because I had a train to catch. And for some reason, my screen just, nothing would work. So I couldn't stop my phone from alarming.
Oh, no. Which is the exact opposite problem that you had last week. God works in mysterious ways, hey, Phil?
Ironic, yeah. Teaching me a lesson.
You're talking of Negronis, I read something in Times today, which said the chef, Tom Kerridge, used to go out, and his first drink was a pint of Negroni. A whole pint of the stuff.
Tom Kerridge is the fat chef.
Was the fat chef.
Was the who's now
he
slim.
Is, yeah, he is the Tyson Fury of chefs.
I once saw him cook a dish that was, I think it was pork belly, like a whole pork belly.
Yes, it sounds like
Tom Kerridge. Or half a pork belly, with a whole tub of honey poured onto it.
Perfect.
And that was it.
Really? That's everything.
There might have been some salt and pepper, but that was it.
Well, Tom Kerridge, I seem to remember he got very far in the Great British Menu. That is a show I'd love to do a podcast about. I've said it before. I'd love to do a podcast about Great British Menu. It's such a perverse show. And everything he cooked was in duck fat. Everything.
Everything.
All goose fat, yeah.
Oh, I had a goose ragu at this amazing little pasta restaurant down Soho this weekend.
Ooh.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, I had breakfast in Borough Market in was it roast?
Very trendy.
£30 it cost me.
I had an amazing the fish and chips at, what was the place? It was Seabass, but oh, it is so good.
Seabass fish and chips.
No, hold on. What was the place called? Clayton's Kitchen in Bath. Oh my god!
There you go.
Unreal.
Egg Chaser's food recommendations.
There you go.
There you go.
And on that, there you go. Giving you some food tips. Giving you some drinking tips. Giving you some Airbnb to avoid tips. And
or,
a little bit of rugby
well,
as well.
Depends.
Depends what you're into.
Yeah, it depends what you're into. yeah. So if you've enjoyed it, and no doubt you have, you can follow us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. You can find us on Instagram. We do that as well occasionally, don't we, Tim?
Yeah.
Have we put anything on Instagram? We must have loads of pictures that we can put on.
Yeah. I'll do all that.
And also on Facebook. We occasionally operate there. And, of course, YouTube. Do not forget YouTube. But until next week, when we'll be back with all the European results and everything else. Unless you boys have got anything else to add, we will see you then.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.